So, we've spent pretty much a day together now, here on retreat, in this place. And it's interesting and useful to stop at this time, as we generally will do, and just reflect a little on what's going on here. What's happening? What are we engaged in? What are we noticing? Kind of interesting as I just look around, see who's here. Not that I'm looking to see who's here, but just in a way to see you, most of you at least. And there's a sense of just kind of wondering, well, how has the day been for you? What's been going on? And Natiko and I, we sort of talk a little bit about what we think might be going on, or what we anticipate is going on, because it's what usually goes on. We don't really know. We don't have some exact science here. And yet, there are, it seems, themes that show up when we do what we've been doing here together. And so, I'd like to reflect and bring some attention to some of the themes that I think are very relevant and rather important in this context. Some of them will be very familiar themes for some of you. Some of them may be quite new to some of you. But essentially the question, and it's the question of our retreat, but it could equally be the question of our life, is, well, what's going on? What's happening? And particularly, what's happening here? Making that question quite immediate and direct. So it's not like trying to figure out some great system or theory, speculate about the things that are beyond the immediacy and directness of our experience. What's going on here? In a very simple way, we could say that we discover ourselves. We encounter ourselves. We meet ourselves in this place. And this place is both Bahnenzer, and this place is Sunday, the 9th, I believe, of May. You'd say that's the time. But it's really much more this place that we inhabit, that we call here, that we call now. And what is it to meet ourselves here? What we notice, perhaps, what I hope we notice, is that we're alive. Something we maybe rather easily take for granted. But we are alive, all of us. And what that means is that somehow we find ourselves in the midst of a process that moves from birth. And a birth that we, at least I didn't choose or plan or organize for myself, and I imagine neither did you for yourselves. We just turned up, it seems. Someone else might have been organizing or planning it, but they didn't ask us. And having arrived, we're also in a process of moving, as I said, towards a conclusion of the process, it seems, which we call death, which will come at a time unknown to us, unpredictable, and again, probably not according to our choice or preference or control. And it's kind of strange, isn't it? When we just stop and reflect on that, even if we've perhaps done it many times, it's just like, oh yeah. How curious. We've turned up, it seems. I mean, we could say we've also turned up on this retreat, and it began yesterday and it will conclude in a week's time or so. And we feel like at least I choose to do that, or I chose to do that. Though we might sometimes, occasionally during the day, wonder about the wisdom of that choice. We might think, did I really want to choose to do this? Come along and sit in a room full of people on a rather soft but nonetheless uncomfortable cushion. And we find ourselves wondering, what's all this about? And it's a healthy kind of wondering, I think. It's a useful way to begin to engage with ourselves and with what's happening here. Life, it seems somewhat unfortunately, doesn't come with an instruction book. We don't get told when we arrive what we're supposed to do. Or not in any way that seems to work. I don't know if you've noticed, if you've ever had one of those things that had instructions and you tried to follow them and it didn't work. You couldn't quite get the thing to do what it was supposed to do. It's kind of frustrating and disappointing if that happens. And the experience of being alive is one in which we can also and easily experience frustration and disappointment if we don't understand what it is that's happened and what's most useful or skillful or supportive in engaging with this process. In some ways, we could describe the journey of spiritual practice as the process of learning to read life's instruction book, which is in fact our life. This is the instruction book. And so, here we are on retreat, engaged in spiritual practice of sitting, walking, standing. We're invited to pay attention. We're invited to open with a sense of inclusive awareness, to just notice what's happening, to focus and gather that attention, that awareness, in a way that allows us to connect with our experience. And we see that this isn't easy to do. It sounds like relatively simple instructions, and perhaps we've done it before and we're coming along looking forward to how much we enjoy retreats, as many of you here will enjoy. And yet, when we come again, we face this, or we encounter this reality that it's not easy to just connect, to stop and allow ourselves to be touched by our life and experience. There's a way in which the way we set this framework up, this retreat situation, all of us here together, the way we are, is a way in which it brings us, it in some ways unstoppably brings us closer to our life. We start to feel it. We start to be touched by it. We start to sense it more deeply, more vividly, more keenly. And while that might sound like something lovely and delightful, if we're sort of suggested that's what's going to happen, come on retreat and really feel your life, we might think, great. But sometimes, of course, the parts, the aspects, the elements of our life that we experience are not the ones we were hoping to get closer to. Sometimes they're the ones we were hoping to get away from. I mean, it sounds kind of idyllic, doesn't it? Come away to a beautiful location in the, you know, by the water and amongst the trees, and there'll be some nice people and good food provided. We don't have to do any work. Well, maybe 45 minutes in the morning. You know, there's not going to be any demands or pressure. Sounds like a holiday, doesn't it? And yet, even if you've just in your whole life only ever spent one day doing this, and that was today, you know already, oh, this is not a holiday. Now, of course, a true holiday derives, in English at least, from the word holy day, something of the spirit to which we might give our time in, as an alternative to be engaged in productive, sort of, or conventionally productive activity of work and producing and consuming, which is what conventional world suggests is mostly useful activity. So, making this day into a real holy day is to be willing to feel how it is to be in the place that we find ourselves. However that shows up, however we show up in that. And what that means for most of us, at least some of the time, not all the time, because there are many lovely and delightful experiences we can encounter. So, you know, just now with the sun coming out, and some of you will have had the opportunity to at least see it out the window, or maybe just enjoy a few moments of sunshine in the late afternoon or early evening, and how lovely. And yet, Of course, we've probably also had other moments where we looked at the cloudy sky and thought, when is spring coming? Seems to be an important question here in Sweden. I understand why. Like we're waiting for something. Or we notice just how our experience isn't the way we want it to be. How this simple, ordinary, just sitting around, walking up and down, back and forth, standing about, doing not so much, while seeking to be connected, to be aware, present, attentive to what's happening, we notice that this is not easy. Sometimes we encounter pain, sometimes boredom, sometimes restlessness, sometimes drowsiness. Or we might feel the impact of fear or anxiety, of loneliness or fear. There are many things that touch our hearts. Maybe grief or confusion, anger, frustration. Maybe born out of circumstances of our lives. Maybe arising because of the way things are just here. So many things we encounter, it seems. Sitting around, causing no trouble, it would seem. And yet these things arise. Often we find it's not, or we think it's not really why we're here. It's not what I came for. Why would I want to sit around having to feel pain or sleepiness or some form of disturbance or distress? And yet we encounter these things in our lives, and so often we're unwilling to turn towards them, to really begin to see and understand what's going on. And here on the retreat, there's a lot of support for seeing what's going on. In fact, we may not always be grateful for this, but in fact, it's really hard to avoid seeing what's going on when we set up our day the way we have here, where we're silent, where we're relatively quiet and contained, and we're following a simple schedule of practice that stretches us a little, it seems, and sometimes a lot. So what do we see when we see how life at times isn't easy for us, isn't always as we wish it? This is, in a way, a fundamental human experience. Something that I think we all recognize. I mean, there might be someone there, someone amongst you is listening and thinking, no, that doesn't happen for me. Everything turned out just the way I wanted it through my whole life. And, you know, wonderful. But I'm not going to ask for a show of hands on that one. But I wouldn't expect that there'd be a lot of hands going up if I didn't. We recognize this, I think. We know this. I'm not suspecting that what I'm saying right now is news to you. And yet, we're not always supported to really give our attention to that truth, to that fact. What we are more supported to do or encouraged to do, and in fact we learn rather early and are supported much more to somehow seek to get away from that, to somehow try and avoid facing that. And it can be that we live our lives, it seems, in a sort of sense of a mixture between hope and fear. And the hope is basically that we're going to find a way to escape from this. And the fear is that basically we're not. But nonetheless, mostly, or what can drive a lot of our activity, what drives much of the world in its busyness, in its urgency, in its contraction, in its conflict, is this attempt to escape from a very ordinary and fundamental aspect of what it means to be alive, which is that it's not always the way we want it. It's not always easy or comfortable or flattering to us. We don't always get to look good. We don't always get to feel comfortable. And what that leads to is a sense that somehow, in order to find peace, in order to come to a place of rest in our hearts, in order to feel that there is meaning or a sense of authenticity in our life, we can often believe that somehow we have to manipulate, fix, change, organize, or somehow remake the way life is. And that the journey or the activity of our life that's important, that's significant, is essentially directed towards getting somewhere or getting something other than what we've got, or being, becoming someone other than what we are. And what that does is it entangles us in a process whereby we look at what's going on and we try and figure out how it happened. I mean, did any of you spend some time today trying to figure out how did something happen? I mean, how did I end up here? Why is it that my knee hurts? Why is my mind so busy? Did any of you spend time trying to figure that out today? It's not unusual. Don't feel bad if you did. I did. And we try and figure out why things happened. We're so busy with that. Because if I can figure out what happened, then perhaps I can work out how to stop that thing happening ever again if it's something I didn't like. Or I can work out how to prolong it or make it happen continuously if I did like it. So much mental activity, and that mental activity, of course, drives our words, our speech, and our actions. It drives our body and our life, if unrecognized and unchecked. This process of trying to get somewhere else, get something else, be someone else, goes on and on and on. And there's the sense of hope, the sense of possibility that somewhere, if I do this enough, it's going to succeed. I'm going to get finished. I'm going to get there. I'll be done. And then, and how lovely that will be. But, you know, if that was true, it would be great. I'd have no problem with it. I'd be signing up straight away. But my own experience is that it doesn't happen. I've talked to a lot of other people, and mostly what they say too is, if they've looked at this process, it doesn't happen. Wherever you get to, whatever you get hold of, whoever you get to become, somehow there's always a sense that somewhere else, something else, someone else is going to still be required. The very momentum itself keeps taking us away. So there's this sense of hope that we have for satisfaction through getting somewhere else. And if we examine, if we look at it, what we see is that underlying all of this is this urge to be comfortable. This urge to experience only that which is enjoyable and pleasant and fun. And to avoid anything at all that causes us discomfort, distress, confusion, disappointment, or pain. And at some level, that's all very understandable. At a certain biological survival level, we're wired up that way. And yet, that biological survival mechanism that causes us to respond in that way is concerned with the sort of the sustaining of the biology. It's not really concerned with the nourishment of the heart and of the mind. And consequently, we find ourselves, when driven by that urge, by that momentum, often feeling unnourished, unsustained, in those places that actually matter to us most, the condition of our heart, our mind. And I think this recognition, this seeing, is what brings many to a situation such as this, brings us into this place. And yet what's interesting is that although we might see that in the world, you know, perhaps it's not really, you know, getting a better... We want more volume? Thank you. So we might see that in the world, it's really not going to make all the difference for us to have a bigger house or a nicer car or a flashier wardrobe or a sort of a more attractive spouse or a more reliable spouse or whatever it might be. Although all those things might be very nice and useful, we start to see that that's so. And yet coming into the retreat, when we turn towards a more spiritual engagement, it's very easy to bring the same attitude, the same basic tendency or propensity of mind to what's going on here, and to be relating to this experience as though somehow it should be better or different than it is. There's a way in which the more obvious and gross or external materialism that we might recognize as being empty and rather without meaning for us translates into our inner relationship, to how we engage with our thoughts and our feelings and our body, and even the very capacity we have to be mindful and present or aware, and equally the capacity we have to be not mindful, to be not present, to be quite unaware at times for, in fact, remarkably large periods in a day, it seems. So what is it like for us that we can't control this experience? What's it like for you when your body aches or when your mind chatters incessantly? When sometimes it's a little too cold in here, someone's left the window open, or sometimes it gets rather hot in this room and there's a lot of bodies, and as we warm up we start to give off a little bit of a, you know, some of us, it seems, we start to notice each other. Not saying there's a problem with that. Or we feel the people around us, sometimes they move, sometimes they breathe and we hear it. And we'd rather we didn't have to listen to some. I mean, I'm trying to be mindful of my breathing. Don't want to be mindful of your breathing. Actually the Buddha said that we'd be mindful of breathing internally and externally. So actually we can be mindful of someone else's breathing. But that's not what we want. That's not what we came here for. We can see how at times we're drowsy and it's hard staying awake. And what do we do with that? Do we hold that against ourselves? Maybe we've tried everything that's been suggested and it doesn't work, and we just don't have the energy to hold our arms up despite the fact that we're assured it will keep us awake. We can't do it. Do we give ourselves a hard time for that? Or can we just see, this experience is like this. Not easy. Not in my control. Not always as I wish it. And yet, just that simple recognition, to rest in that, is an immense journey for us. And we have to make this journey again and again. Pretty much every time we find ourselves disappearing into the mind of reactivity, of busyness, of fantasy, stories of the past and the future, at some way and some level, often unconsciously, we've decided, no, I don't really want to meet my life. We haven't had that thought. It's not like we've decided I'm going to run away. But at some level, something in us is doing that. Is moving away, is seeking to escape from. And it's funny how we arrive at the end of the day, and it seems like it's quite an effort to do what we're doing here. Has anyone found it tiring? You know, it's just about 8 o'clock. Now, most of us wouldn't think of that as very late, but sometimes we arrive at this point in the day and we're exhausted. We're like, this is the hardest thing I've done for weeks, if not months or years. And it's true, it is really quite hard what we're doing here. But if we were to explain to one of our friends at home, you know, well, actually it was really hard, that meditation retreat. You know, we had to sit around doing very little for about 40, 45 minutes. And we got up and we ambled slowly back and forth. And then we sat down a while, then we got to stand around, then they fed us. We did some more of sitting and walking, and they fed us some more. I was exhausted. You know, someone who hadn't been here would have no idea what you were talking about. They'd say, how could that be? And yet, the energy gets so much consumed in the resistance and the struggle with what's happening. And in the attempt, the unsuccessful, but nonetheless compelling, it seems, attempt to escape from this. This that's mind, body, heart going on. And yet, of course, you know, we do so much to try and get away from it, but we can't. We can't escape this. We cannot get away. And at some level we think, oh, that's not what I want to hear. That is not good news. But actually, it's really good news. The fact that we cannot escape this means at some point, when we really see that, we'll have to give up trying to do so. We can't always do that as an act of will. Otherwise, we'd just tell you to and you would and we could all go home. There's something else that goes on in us that needs to learn. And the learning only comes through the experience of seeing, in fact, how frustrating and difficult it is to keep on trying to escape. And how unsuccessful it is, equally. So some of that is what we come up against, what we see, what we face in this experience. And this is why it's hard. Because we invest a lot in that capacity, in that ability to control, to manipulate, or to escape from what's going on. And we're really invited here to turn 180 degrees from that orientation of seeking to manipulate or control our experience, to avoid it, or those parts of it we don't like, or feel threatened or challenged by, and really turn wholeheartedly to this experience. The instructions that we offer, the suggestions that we give, are really saying, in the most simple terms, okay, meet your life right here. Come back to where you are. Start to get to know this. And to see what might be discovered here. Not somewhere else. Not something else. Not having to become somebody else. But this that's here. That's now. Can we get really interested in this? Like, what do we really want to spend our life doing? What's really important for us? These are the questions that perhaps we start to sense or feel when we come on retreat. Maybe not just at this point, maybe. Sometimes they come earlier, sometimes later in a retreat. But now, what's of real importance to you? What do you really want from your life? If you were to let go of the ideas of what should be, or your belief in what's not possible, what is it we yearn for, that we long for, that we most love or treasure or value? It's not that we need to have an answer to those questions, but that there's something about asking them and allowing them to rest in the heart that begins to speak to us. And for myself, the really important questions are not questions for answering. This is something I've seen many times. They're questions to be asked and felt. And the power, the potency of the question is really in the feeling of it. Not feeling in terms of an emotion, but the degree to which one allows oneself to be touched by the resonance, by the potency of the question. And touched in a place of openness that questioning invites us to enter, where we don't presume we know the answers already. If you think you've come here to get your mind to be still, and that a calm, quiet mind will be peace and bliss and nirvana, it may be that that isn't what's going to happen. Now, it may be that it is what happens. It certainly could happen. But that might not be what this is all about. And if you struggle with the fact that your mind isn't quiet, that certainly is going to give you some opportunity to see what happens when we struggle with our experience. So even that is useful. Even that has its place, has its value. But the sense of what are the important questions for us? It's like, what are we here for? The poem by Mary Oliver I'd like to share. It's called The Summer Day. She writes, "Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? A grasshopper? I mean, the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?" In many ways, we're learning to just stroll through the fields of our life when we practice meditation. What does it mean to be idle and blessed? Perhaps to not be seeking to get somewhere else. And in the turning towards where we are wholeheartedly, we start to see both the questions that arise that may touch us with a sense of interest or curiosity, where we might feel that sense of, so what's important? Because, you know, that sense of what's important, we can't put it off. We can't wait for another life or another week or another retreat. This is the chance we have, this life. And wherever we are is the place we need to respond. So there's a way in which we're invited to not take for granted the opportunity we have, this life, this retreat, this moment, to see what's important for us. And with that sense of importance, if we make where we are, if we allow what's actually happening to be the most important, to be what we're really interested and concerned with, to give ourselves the immense and precious gift of where we are, of what is happening right now, to not give so much authority to our stories of the past and our dreams of the future, as if they might somehow be the resolution to our life, but to say, okay, this is how it is. What's going on? What's happening here? We have the opportunity to see, to discover, and to learn for ourselves that really it is when we relinquish that very urge and urgency to escape, to seek for something other, that in that very relinquishing, the letting go, and the learning patiently, steadily, and gently, learning to free ourselves, to free our heart, our mind, our life from the pull of that urgency. That in that freeing of our life, our heart, our mind from that pull, we come to discover the natural peace and freedom of life. And this is an interesting mixture of both a discovery and a training, both a process and something immediate, that at times may present more as one or the other. So one of the things that's useful to be aware with this is that we can't somehow coerce ourselves into the practice. You know this word coerce, like force, or it's as if we sort of put a gun to our head and say, okay, you've got to do this. It doesn't work that way. We can't. It really needs to come as an invitation. It really needs to come because we care for our lives. Because we care deeply, and we do, for what this is, to be alive. And with that, to notice how the training of the mind, it's a little bit like, or usefully seen perhaps like training a puppy. I use this metaphor often, and particularly for those of you who are new, I think it's really helpful to think of what it's like to train a young dog to heel, to follow, if you've ever done that or heard of it, seen it being done. For a puppy to live in our world, it needs to know when it's okay to run about and when it needs to stay by its master. And so if we have a puppy and we tell it, heel, follow me, the puppy doesn't know what we're talking about. It runs around, goes all over the place. Now, if when we see it doing that, we yell out and say, bad dog. If it does it again, we hit it. Pretty soon it gets the idea, well, I'm not hanging around with that guy. They're pretty unpleasant. And it runs off at every opportunity. When our mind disappears, when our thoughts pull us away, when we find ourselves lost, if we criticize or judge or chastise or beat ourselves for that, it doesn't encourage us to be present at all, but quite the opposite. It just makes it feel like this isn't a very safe place. I'll get out of here at the first opportunity. Whereas if when we're training the puppy, what we see is that it runs away, and maybe it's sniffing a flower, or maybe it's decorating a tree, or chasing a butterfly. And we say, oh, there you are. Huh, look what you're up to. Come over here. Come back. If we do that firmly but kindly, again and again, the puppy actually doesn't really essentially know why it's doing it to begin with, but it thinks, oh, that guy's kind of friendly. Maybe I'll hang out with them. Maybe it's quite nice over here. And so we learn to be more present, to be more connected. When we engage in the activity, the apparent activity of that connecting, of opening to, of including and turning towards our experience again and again, when we do so in a spirit of kindness and friendliness and warmth towards ourselves and towards our experience, we start to see and understand that the reactivity that catches us, that carries us away from our experience, is not something we're bound to follow. The tendency of the mind to resist the difficult or the unpleasant, to grasp after the pleasant or the enjoyable, and to be somehow disinterested in all those experiences which are neither pleasant nor unpleasant, this is not something which has to define our lives. We are actually remarkably empowered if and when we understand the nature of that empowerment. While we can't control our lives or our experience, we can choose to make the perhaps single most significant, possibly the only really significant choice we make in our lives, which is the choice to turn towards what is here, the choice to meet what is actual and real, again and again. And this is something we can do. This is something we are doing. And as we continue to practice in this way, although after one day it may for some feel like not much has happened, actually much has happened. Much that we've contacted that might be difficult or confusing, there's just a way in which we need to start to learn to let that contact happen. Start to see what allows us to stay present with it. Sense of patience, of kindness, of courage at times is needed. And these things come, born of our willingness and the care that brings us here. And almost it seems, in spite of ourselves, in spite of our, at times, resistance, reactivity, or our well-intentioned but nonetheless often ineffective efforts to make it happen, it seems almost in spite of that, as we do this, as we engage in this process, we notice that more and more we're able to be here. It just somehow happens. It's not something we do, but it's supported by our willingness, by our intentionality, by our engagement and the wholeheartedness we bring to this again and again. To just be willing to step out of the pull of the mind that takes us away, without judging it, without rejecting it, without getting into comparing ourselves and wondering how well we're doing. This is one of the hardest things. So many times I hear reports and people say how, well, you know, I'm sitting there in meditation and my mind is all over the place. My knee's aching. I'm drowsy one moment, restless the next. And it just kind of seems hopeless and impossible. And I look around and everybody else seems to be sitting there so calm, so still, so peaceful. And you know, there's this experience that happens so often where we look and we think, they can all do it. They're all meditating. They're all so calm, so peaceful. You know, it's like this room is full of, you know, 30-something Buddhas to be and one overcooked vegetable. And guess who the vegetable is? It's me. And it's like, hopeless. Of course, moments later, that person sitting there, having realized it is hopeless and given up, sitting there, someone else will look over at them and think, wow, they're really quiet. They're not moving at all. Wow. They're probably having some profound experience. So if we can let go of that habit of judging and comparing ourselves, you don't need to know where you are in relationship to someone else or in relationship to any kind of standard or model or map that you might be holding on to. Maps and models have their value, but more often I find they're profoundly limited because we're always comparing the truth of our experience to the idea or the concept in the map or the model. Whether it be a quiet mind, maybe my mind's supposed to be quiet, and if it hasn't been quiet today, it was a wasted day. Not true. Sometimes what's happening is the mind is quietening, and we see it, we notice it. Other times, we're being impacted or touched by things that generate activity in the mind, and actually what we're needing to learn to do is open the heart to this active mind, and to those things that are stimulating that activity. And that process of heart opening, less quantifiable, less obvious than whether our mind is really still, is nonetheless equally important, equally transformative, and equally part of the training that we undertake in this practice. So, what we really have the opportunity to learn, to understand, is that the true satisfaction, the true peace, the joy and the happiness that we quite naturally and understandably sense is possible for us and seek for in our lives is possible, is available. And yet it comes through our willingness to enter into this life and this moment unconditionally, to not place demands upon how it should be before we'll do that. To not place demands upon how we must be before it will happen. To enter into our life unconditionally, without demands or preconditions. When we're willing and able to do that, life itself becomes unconditional. Life, in fact, becomes unconditioned. And the very nature of this is peace and freedom. Something rather ordinary, not at all esoteric, not in fact far removed from the natural expression of our experience. And yet, so easily we don't recognize it, we don't see it, because we're busy looking for something else that we imagine to be in some other place. And in any moment where we stop doing that, we quite naturally and inevitably discover ourselves, discover our life, discover this right here. So I'd like to finish with a poem by Ryo Kan, who is a favorite teacher and poet and a sort of example to me of a wonderful spiritual life. He was a Zen monk who lived in the 17th century. And he writes, "The rain has stopped. The storm has passed. And the sky is clear again. When your heart is pure, all things in your world are pure. Let go of this fleeting world. Abandon your struggle with yourself. Then the moon and the flowers will guide you along the way. So let's sit quietly for a minute or two together.